Welcome all to the September 28th Q&A for the OPCUG. I've muted everybody. You do have the ability to unmute yourself. If you wanted to jump in with comment or question anytime, please feel free to do so. Please remute yourself afterwards so we'll keep background noise to a minimum. The audio is being recorded. The audio file, the deck, and a PDF form and a text file of the contents of the chat window will be going up on the website later on tonight. And with that, I will turn it over to Alan to lead us through tonight's deck. Alan, take it away.
Okay, thank you, Chris. And we'll start right in with a share from yours truly. So anybody who likes walking and hiking and biking in nature doesn't work too well if you just drive through the forest, I guess. But if you're interested in the things around you, birds are a bit of a problem, I think, taking pictures of, but certainly flowers, for example, are pretty easy. They don't tend to move very far. And this app for iPhone, for Android, and I think there's an iPhone version as well. Basically, it's an image recognition app. So you take a picture of something and it goes out to the web and looks up in a database and basically tells you what you're looking at. So if you're not an expert on flowers, which I certainly am not, it's actually quite a useful piece of kit. So for example, if you wander down my favorite sparrow field and you see the sparrows flitting in and out of the vegetation, yeah, that's why you can't take pictures of them. But you might be interested in, well, what's this pretty purple flower or the pretty yellow flower or maybe even these beaten down grasses at the edge of the path here. Now, what are they? So you whip out your favorite cell phone and you call up the Seek application and you can set a location basically by looking at the map. So I've told it that I'm in Ottawa, so that gives it a fighting chance to find any geospecific species. And then you notice down the bottom, down here, there's a green camera icon. So you basically push that button and point your camera at the item of interest. And here's our pretty purple flowers, which it tells me are New England asters. And by the same token, if you point at the yellow flower, you'll find that it's one of the goldenrods. And you notice down here it says almost that species. So in this case, it can't actually figure out. It knows that this is a member of the goldenrods genus, but it can't actually identify the particular species because there's lots of different goldenrods. So it's suggesting trying a different angle, zoom in, take more pictures, and maybe it will then figure out what you're actually looking at. Here's the seed head of that grassy stuff. So again, you point the picture at that, and it tells you that this is a common reed. And if you click on species up here, then it will tell you that, sure, this is a common reed. And now you can view the species. So again, it goes out to the web, and we'll give you more information about this plant. And this is what I would call Phragmites. And this is actually an invasive species. And it's taking over a lot of the wetland areas, which is not so good because it's not really good for wildlife. It's not good for, there's no food value in it, basically. It's not particularly good for cover because it grows so densely. And so it's not a particularly good species, but somebody brought it in somehow from Asia, and now it's spreading like wildfire. Anyway, so if you have grandkids, for example, you might find this an interesting teaching tool as you go on your local walks.
Stu asks, how does this compare to Google Lens?
I have no idea. I don't use Google Lens.
Okay.
Don't know. It's probably the same kind of idea, Stu, except this is specific to nature-type species. So it probably doesn't identify the Eiffel Tower, for example.
but I suspect it does a much better job at what it's designed to do than Google Lens would do.
Possibly, yeah. Don't know. Be interesting to find out. Well, let Stu do the research and he can do a follow-up for us. Okay, talking about plants, I always thought this guy ate spinach, but Bob Harris tells me no, the can is full of keyboard shortcuts. So this is a suggestion from Bob Harris. He thinks we should have a computer basics item on keyboard shortcuts, and he's generated a few slides here to start us off, and he points out that they let you do a lot more in much less time. So his example is if you think about copying text. So we're in Notepad here, and we've used the mouse and we've highlighted OPCUG. And so now what we want to do is click on this edit button up here, and maybe we want to select copy from the menu here. But you notice that for every action here where you can select using the graphical user interface, there's also a keystroke that will do the same thing. So the copy keyboard shortcut is Control C, which I mean, everybody probably knows Control C and Control V, but there's all kinds of other ones here which you may not know about, which can be quite useful. Anyway, so Bob suggests that you try not using the drop-down menus and instead try and remember the keyboard shortcut, because that's 10 times faster, he says, than trying to use the menu system. And that seems quite reasonable, because to use the menu system, you have to click on the menu and then click on your selection and then close down things. And so if you just hit one key, basically, hold the control down and tap C, that's pretty quick. And the keyboard shortcuts that we probably all know and love, certainly the first two, control and C for copy, and Control and V for paste. And maybe you also know Control X, which is the cut the text out of the document and paste it somewhere else. So these three keyboard shortcuts are probably well known and used a lot. But the same kind of advice goes for anything else. Maybe you could write them down on a piece of paper and stick it next to your desktop monitor, or print it on a sticky note and actually stick that to the bezel. And then if you have some time, you can practice these commands before you actually need to use them in anger, as it were. And Bob's good suggestion is don't try and do too many at once. Just work on a few and get used to those. And then eventually you can build up your repertoire. So going forward, the question is, Chris tells me he doesn't use an awful lot of keyboard shortcuts, and I think Bob has indicated all of the keyboard shortcuts that I typically use. So Chris and I are not particularly good sources of information here. So we're looking for somebody who's a fan of keyboard shortcuts, knows quite a few, who'd be willing to give some presentations at Q&A, these short little things like I'm demonstrating here. And so we're asking, can we stay tuned? Are we going to hear more about these wonderful things called keyboard shortcuts? So as usual, if you have any interest in doing this for the rest of the group here, send us a note to suggestion box and we will sign you up. Okay, so moving along, I have a computer basics thing on where's the mouse? And I always have sometimes on computer systems, I have an awful time finding the mouse on the screen. And in particular, I have this friend of mine who has three screens, and I can never find the mouse when I want to open one of his icons. And it's a real problem. So the question is, where is the mouse? Well, the mouse is right here. I mean, it's in plain view there. Everybody knew where it was, right? But there are ways that you can enhance it. And a lot of these are built in, some of them are built into Windows. So for example, if you go to Settings and Devices, you'll see that the mouse here is one of the options. So if you scroll down here to mouse, then you bring up this screen, and the ones we're interested in are down here, these related settings. So we can adjust the mouse size and the and various things, and some other options which we'll have a look at in just a second. So if we want to change the size of the mouse, you notice that we have this this scroll bar here, so we can drag him across over here somewhere, and you'll see that the mouse changes to quite a big size. And for my system, that's actually way too big. I reckon something like 3 or 4 is much more reasonable. Now, the other thing you can do is change the color. So, for example, we could pick a color from here, and then we have a choice of all kinds of colors. I've chosen yellow, and now you can see that our large mouse has now gone bright yellow, so it may be easier to track down on any kind of screen. So now if we go back to the main mouse type screen in the settings and look at the additional mouse options, then one of the things that's quite useful on the buttons here is to change the speed of the double click. So if it's too fast and you're not getting the action that you're expecting, or if it's way too slow for how you use the mouse, then again you can drag the slider around until you find somewhere that's convenient. And then the other thing that we're interested in up here is pointer options. And in particular down here, display pointer trail. So if I were to click on display pointer trail, so now when I move the mouse, instead of the mouse just hanging up here like the blue circle, I end up with a trail of arrows, which is actually really good for finding the mouse, but for me it's really annoying having these things floating around all the time. So I find a bigger mouse and turning off or leaving the mouse trails turned off is quite a good way of finding the mouse on the screen. Anyway, if you're interested in looking at those, it's free, it's built into Windows, and they're all checkboxes you can turn on, and if they don't work, you can basically turn them off again. Okay, moving along.
Wait, one thing that I found useful, at the bottom of the screen, there's a checkbox for show location of pointer when I press the control key, and that's a useful thing to turn on.
Okay, but then you have to remember to press the control key, right? Yeah, I know that you press the control key and it kind of does a concentric circle thing, building up, and then kind of gives you a good idea that this is where the mouse is right now. Okay, well, Tom has another mouse thing, basically dealing with context menus when you use the mouse in right click mode. You'll have to unmute your mic, Tom, again and share your screen, right?
Actually, I suppose I can do my presentation from my thing here. Let's see.
Well, you're going to do a demo.
Yeah, I'm going to do a demo.
I can change the first couple of slides if you want. That's not a problem.
No, that's all right. Here I am. So, in the Internet Explorer, there's a variety
of... screen yet.
Oh, I have to do that, eh? And screen one. And share. Okay, there I am.
Yep, that works.
Okay. Often you want to do things to a file that's in the File Explorer. And as you can see, there are a variety of... See, there's the control key. There's a variety of things you can do with it. Often these are added by the programs themselves, like PSPad or Edit with Notepad Plus, Earthen View Operations, Scan with Hitman Pro, et cetera, et cetera. But there's one here, Compact LZX, that I added myself. And you can add them there, and it becomes quite useful. So here's how you do it. For safety, it's a good idea to back up the registry, and you can do this by creating a system restore point, which takes a couple of minutes, but it backs up everything. then open Reg Edit and run it as an administrator, and go to this particular section of the registry and create a new key, for example, compact LZX. And in that key, create a command key. And then in the command key, there'll be a default value. And then you put in what the command is going to be. And %1 is the placeholder for the file name, the complete file name. And that's how you do it. It's pretty simple. And as a demo, let's so let's just choose a file in documents, I guess. Almost anything, but let's go to Velo. I have a variety of things. Velo is what I do for my bicycle interested things. So there are a variety of things, but click on size and you can see there are a variety of things here that are fairly big. Here's a Tale of Two Cities. This is a PDF document. If I go to the properties, it's 66.9 megabytes and the size on disk is 64.2. So it's compressed already. But I can compress this using Compact LX just by clicking it. It quickly goes through and it is just doing that one file. Now, if I probably do, if I right click here and choose properties again, I haven't improved it because I apparently compressed it earlier. But let's try another one. This is blue, so it's compressed kind of the ordinary way, but it's video, so it's automatically kind of compressed. Here's trafficcalming.pdf. And if I click here, that's also compressed. I wish I could choose something that's not compressed. PPT, that's not. 14.8, 14.6. But if I try to compress this with Compact LZX, it's also 14.6. I should have chosen a, let's see, if I choose the logs, go on here, and size, there are usually, do I have my, yeah, that's everything. Star.blog. And if I choose some big log like this, Windows Panther, I wonder what that is. But if I go to the properties here, it's also compressed. I've run out of choices.
Okay. One thing I think is worth pointing out on this too is that this works this way as long as you have a program that you can just run and add a file as a parameter to that. But there are some cases where, you know, you have to open the program and then load the file into it and things like that. So there are some instances where you can't actually just run the program and add the file name as a parameter to it, but anytime that you do have that, yeah, this technique would work.
And you can see there are several varieties of this. This is the complete explanation as to how to do it. That showed me how to do it. You can also restrict it to particular file types, to full directories and folders, and not files. And when it's when you shift right click rather than right click, and you can also add an app. It also shows you to add an app launch to the desktop right click, and you can also create .reg files to automatically add or remove keys or values from your registry. So check this out if you want to do things a little bit faster and easier in File Explorer. And I'll stop my share now.
Okay, thanks, Tom. And we have another share coming up, and this one is from Chris.
Yeah, so they just came out with a new version of PowerToys, and in 0.62, I think eventually they might get to version 1 of the PowerToys. But they had a number of new PowerToys, and I looked at a couple of them. One of them that I thought was kind of interesting is Text Extractor. So if there's any in case where you get a graphic of some sort, and it's got text that you can actually read it and see it, but it's in as a graphic, so you can't, you know, if you want to use that text, you can't just directly copy in the text out of the graphic and paste it in somewhere else to use that information. So it will put out plain text output from the program, and it automatically puts it onto the clipboard, so you're all ready to go somewhere else and do a Control V to paste it in. The default shortcut to do this is Windows Shift T, and as always with PowerToys, you can edit the shortcut key if you want it to be something else. You can see where you can get it in the settings for the PowerToys there. You go down to Text Extractor on the left-hand side. It will be enabled by default, I believe. If it's not, you can click the on and enable it, and then if you need to, edit the shortcut key. So next. So this was one example I did on this, and this is my business card. And so I thought this would be an interesting one because we have some scripted text as well as we have some plain text, letters that are non-script. And so that's the graphic. So next. So I just basically took a picture of it. So to do this, you press the shortcut keys, and then you'll get the entire screen will gray out or dim, and you'll get a crosshair somewhere on your screen where your mouse cursor is, and you just basically put it to one corner of the area that you want to select. Next. And then you click, and you drag out a bounding box, and then you release the mouse. And you can see it's a little bit – this graphic in particular is a little bit hard to see because it's black background, but you can see the slightly lighter area where I've dragged out that bounding box, which encloses the Chris Taylor as well as photography and the Ottawa, Canada, and my email address. And as soon as I release the mouse button, the screen comes back to normal and the extracted text gets copied to the clipboard. So then I pasted it into Notepad, and what came in? Just the photography, Ottawa, Canada, and my email address. So it missed the script part of the thing. So next. So you can see that's the part that it just didn't recognize that, and copy the text of Chris Taylor onto the clipboard. So, I went and I decided, well, let me see if it got confused by the idea that there was some type text as well as scripted. And so I decided I'll drag out a bounding box just around the word Chris. And then when I release the mouse button, the crosshairs returned immediately. Okay, and that tells you, if that happens, that nothing got captured to the clipboard. So it didn't think that there was anything underneath that bounding box where it could copy text to the clipboard. So in this case, I just gave up. And the easiest way to give up is just hit the escape key and the crosshairs will go away. So next. Okay, I gave it some more challenging things. So this was a news site on the internet, and it has columns and all kinds of things like that. The text is all very well rendered because it is a web page, and it wasn't looking at graphics of the text. It was the web page was actually sending out plain text in the stream. So it was a complex layout, and I found that when you get these complex layouts, it will often confuse the order. So for example, we see at the top, it actually picked up the text correctly for the captions of two of the photos. Next. And then we see that it started to get mixed up. So you have the first part, what about Putin and the Russian, a few good, But then the word options was actually put in after some other information, Mar-a-Lago search, and the federal judge appoints. So that's something from the middle column there. And so it got confused about the order of things when it's column information like that. Next. And in here we see that a bullet was actually interpreted as being letter E. Next. And here we had a hyphen that was misinterpreted as being a bullet. Next. And then this one here, it actually rendered this quite well. So that one column, it actually picked it all up very well. No errors in the text and each line appropriate. It didn't pick up on the fact that it was bulleted text, but not a big deal. It extracted the text quite well. Next. So what I found is when you have complex layouts like this, you're better off to do multiple extractions of small parts of it and just do multiple goes at it to pick up all the text that you want, and you'll be much more successful when it's a complex layout. Next. So here is another one I found was interesting. This is an ad, and we can see that it extracted most of the text quite well, but again, it got confused by the columns. So that middle column, you know, we have the AC service and repair and timing belts, but then all of a sudden it picked up some stuff off from the left-hand column, but then it stuck in one line from the column that I was looking at, or, you know, the middle column, and then it got some of the stuff from the left again, and then it went back to the middle column, and so it really did get confused by the columns as to what is a stream of text. Next. What I found worked really, really well is if I just extracted that one column, no problem. It picked up everything really well, gave the bullets, all the rest of it, did a really good job on it. Next. So here was one where, again, it was pretty well-rendered text. There were some errors in the extraction. So the word highway, for some reason, you know, it looked like I, lie, they, and so it really got confused by the word highway. And the dollar sign in 695, they picked it up as a capital S. So the extracted text, you know, for the most part was quite good, but it did have some issues with that. Next. Then I gave it something really challenging. So this is really poorly rendered text, and there were a lot of errors in it, but I was surprised that it got anything right out of that. I mean, you can read it, but it's pretty tricky stuff. And next, you can see that it actually picked up things like ample note about who you are, what you're, no problem at all. You know, some of the stuff later on, your favorite quote, your temperament, you know, things like that. It actually did a surprisingly good job on actually extracting the text. Next. And then I decided I would hand it off to a commercial program that claims to be able to extract text from graphics. So Snagit, which I really like as a screen capture program. And generally speaking on grab text, it does a really good job. But on this really poorly rendered text, it did a surprisingly horrible job at extracting any of the text out of that. So in this case, the Power Toy did a much better job than, you know, Snagit, a commercial program, did at extracting text from that particular graphic. So next. So overall, I think it does a pretty good job. And I think that no matter what you use to extract text, make sure that you proof the results, because they can make mistakes, things like the dollar sign being interpreted as an S and things like that. So you really do need to proof your results. And when you get those complex layouts, take small sections and do them one at a time, and you'll get much better results out of it. If you want to download the Power Toys, the URL is there, and I'll paste that into the chat as well. It includes all kinds of other tools. It's just one of the tools that are available. You can't actually download just one of the Power Toys. You get it as an entire collection. But I'm a big fan of them. I think they're really great to use, and I think most people can probably find at least a couple of the Power Toys that'll give you some very useful tools, and they're free. And that's it.
Okay, thanks, Chris. So Tom notes that the Power Toys are 64-bit only.
Yeah. Yeah, I never thought about that. But, yeah, I'm really wondering. I think it begins at Windows 10. I don't think they'll even run under Windows 7. So I don't know that there's anybody on Windows 10 running 32-bit. I'm not sure.
And he says that, so there's no intelligent use of a dictionary.
No. Well, actually, to be truthful, I have absolutely no idea if they what they have behind that is doing the important of the extraction. They may have. I just have absolutely no idea how they determine what letters are there. There could be something. I have no idea.
Okay. Thanks very much, Chris. Moving along, it's time for Bob Walker, who's going to pick up on his series of the Microsoft Store, and this will be part three. If Bob, you're ready to share your screen.
Yep, let me give it a try here. And okay, everybody seeing the start slide there?
Yep.
Okay. So we're looking at the Microsoft Store over four sessions, and tonight's session is desktop apps versus Microsoft Store apps, and this is part B because we were limited in time last week, so I split this into two pieces. So just a reminder, depending on who you listen to, the term Microsoft Store apps can refer to any app from the Microsoft Store or a universal Windows platform app from the Microsoft Store. So for the sake of consistency and clarity in this series of presentations, the term Microsoft Store apps will refer to any app from the Microsoft Store, and UWP, or Universal Windows Platform, will refer specifically to a UWP app from the store. So last session we looked at apps based on the Universal Windows Platform and all the great things about the Universal Windows Platform and all the wonderful things it could do for you. And the Universal Windows Platform apps sounded really great. So why would you not want to use them? First off, many of the UWP apps are designed to run on devices with small screens, so the user interface must be simplified to be usable on these small screens. And the simplified user interfaces can also result in limitations on UWP apps functionality. And in particular, some of these devices with the small screens also have very limited horsepower, so they can't really operate a lot of the functions. This is a desktop version of Microsoft's OneNote, which a lot of us use. Like other Office apps, it has tabs along the ribbon for all sorts of features. These include advanced tools like revision history, the ability to record a video, and all sorts of tags, plus support for macros and other things. The buttons are also close together, as you'd expect for something designed for a mouse. In comparison, here's what the UWP version of OneNote looks like. You can see how simple the user interface is compared to the desktop version. It has fewer tabs and buttons with icons that are spread further apart. And in addition, the store version offers far fewer settings than its desktop counterpart. The UWP version of OneNote feels more like an app that you'd use on your phone than a desktop program. And while it's perfectly suitable for quick use, OneNote power users may find that the features really lacking. And I have a link here to check out a closer version at OneNote's version differences if you're interested more on this. And it gives a good comparison between the two different versions. Now, this is a desktop version of the very popular VLC media player. A lot of people use this, including myself, and the desktop edition has a wealth of features that you've come to expect from this program. Along the bottom bar, you can control the playback, including both adjusting both the audio and the video effects. The desktop VLC supports subtitles, the ability to open media from sources like network streams. There's on-screen control and customization, and a whole lot more. It's a really great program. Now, this is a UWP version of the VLC Media Player. You can still change some options, but there are only a handful compared to everything in the desktop version. It still offers support for subtitles and playback from the network sources, but doesn't let you customize the user interface. It doesn't allow you to play from a DVD or a Blu-ray disc. It doesn't allow you to use a lot of VLC's other hidden tricks. And there's a link here to what a lot of these hidden tricks are. All the links are listed at the end of this presentation. And no doubt Chris has already posted them into the chat bar there.
I have.
Yeah. You'll also notice that the buttons in the UWP version are much larger. This makes them easier to use for touchscreen users. But in third-party testing, the UWP version froze up several times when trying to start a simple video. So there's obviously some functional differences there. The store version is serviceable. Or the UWP version is serviceable, but power users will find an awful lot lacking. Some apps are available from the Microsoft Store in both desktop and UWP versions, but some apps in the store are UWP only or desktop only. If the desktop version of the app you want isn't available in the store, just the UWP version, you'll probably have to download it from its official website or from a third-party download site. Now, I got this information here from Chris. Frequently with store apps that cost money, you can install on as many as 10 computers for the one license fee. Versus if you go to the application's home site, quite often the license fee covers only use on one or two computers. You have to do the installation under the MS account that you use to purchase the license on. So if you're installing it on an additional computer where the person is logged in using a different Microsoft account, when you run the Microsoft Store app, you log out from within the store app and log into the Microsoft Store account used to purchase the license. You can then install the app. It'll show up under the library section in the left-hand bar. And then after you install it, you can log out of the Microsoft Store and log back in using the regular user account. The app will still be available to all the users on that machine. Now, Linda, who presents very often for us on photography-related topics, bought Photoscape X Pro, which is not all that inexpensive at $52 Canadian. But considering it can be installed on 10 computers, that brings the value up considerably. And Linda's presented on Photoscape X Pro a couple times for us there. So it's a great app that you might want to have a good look at. Adobe Photoshop Elements costs Canadian $129 in the Microsoft Store. It can be installed on up to 10 computers. If you buy the Windows 32 app, bit app on the Adobe Web Store for US $99, it can only be installed on two devices. So you get an extra value proposition on some of these apps with the Microsoft Store. Aside from the universal Windows platform and desktop apps, The store also contains many apps for web services. These include Pandora, Amazon, Netflix, Instagram, and others. Now, in some cases, these so-called apps are simply a wrapper on a website such as Amazon. There's little reason to use the store app version when you can go directly to the site on your favorite browser. Conversely, when you go to buy some apps, especially Microsoft apps from places like Amazon, they take you to the Microsoft store to do the deal. So even though the price might be different through Amazon than if you went directly to the Microsoft store, you'll pay the Amazon price, but you'll do the business through the Microsoft store. Note that Microsoft apps bought from the Microsoft store can have remarkably different prices depending on the site that took you to the store. There's been a couple discount sites for Microsoft Office, for example, that have sold it for about 10% of the price that Microsoft sells it for. But it all goes through the Microsoft store, and you pay the discounted price. When the Microsoft store apps for web services like Pandora, Amazon, Netflix, Instagram, and others, you might not be getting all the features through the Microsoft store version that you get if you went directly to the website, and you may get a simpler user interface. For example, you can scroll through Instagram in a browser with the Microsoft store app, but you need to use an Instagram app to access some of the features. You may also prefer to use a UWP app for video services like Netflix and Hulu for easy access, because basically once you choose the movie or the TV show or whatever it is you want to watch, the way you got there is irrelevant, and because the movie or the TV show takes up the whole screen anyway. So many laptop and desktop users will find that a fully featured desktop version of an app is preferable to a simplified UWP version. But that said, the simplified UWP version may be more suitable for apps you only need to use very occasionally and only require the basic functionality. Or if you frequently use your touchscreen laptop in tablet mode, the UWP app is more suitable in those cases. Now, a lot of the info I presented in this presentation was gleaned from this particular article here, which I give the URL for. That said, the article gives the impression that almost all of the apps available in the Microsoft Store are UWP apps, and they even refer to them as Microsoft Store apps. So that brings up some of the confusion. That said, you can explore their roundup of the best apps in the Microsoft Store, and I'll be covering some of these in the next session. And if you download any desktop app, be sure to check the integrity of the installer with one of these free hash checkers. And there, if you click on that link, it'll take you to the URL. Coming up next session, we're going to look at the best Microsoft Store apps for Windows 10. And if you download the deck, there is all the URLs, and Chris has already pasted these into the chat bar, so they're all available. So I'll we have a little bit of time left, so I have another quickie presentation I just threw together earlier in the session here. So let me bring this up. Came up on this over the last couple of days here. Costco has some great deals right now on smartphones, So if anybody wants to upgrade their smartphone, now would be a great time to do it on. The base price of the smartphones, and this is a price that any purchase plan is based on, whether it's through Bell or Virgin or Rogers or Fido or anything else, is usually cheaper at Costco and sometimes hundreds of dollars cheaper than other places such as the carrier's own store or website or through other dealers. And Costco deals with all the major carriers, including Bell, Rogers, Virgin, Fido, etc. Now, right now, Costco has a promotion on where some of the smartphones are an extra $100 to $300 off. They're already low price. And plus, they give you a $300 Costco gift card. Now, the guy I was talking to at Costco had no idea when the promotion would end. He said basically, it might end tomorrow, it might end after Christmas. You know, he had no idea because Costco doesn't really tell him. It's sort of a bit of a secret there. That said, they're running out of the various phones on the deal. So if you want to upgrade, take advantage of this deal really soon. And if you upgrade a Samsung to a Samsung, a newer model Samsung, they have an app that transfers all of the apps, settings, data, pictures, and everything over to the new phone seamlessly. It's like, you know, I got a new phone today at Costco. The deal was incredible, and they did this transfer for me and everything. And not only that, they also threw in a free set of earbuds and a car charger. So this is a great deal for anybody that's looking to upgrade their smartphone in the very near future. So I just thought I'd let everybody know about it so they can save a few bucks.
That's great, Bob. Natalie has a question. Is that with a plan, or can you just buy an unlocked phone?
You can buy the unlocked phone, but if you link to a plan with your favorite carrier through Costco, plan deals, if you like want to pay for it over time, usually if you get it on a plan, you'll save a few hundred dollars off the price you would pay if you just buy the phone and then go to the carrier for a plan. So, and as an example, my old Samsung Galaxy 5 was many, many years old. I couldn't install some of the more recent apps on it because the operating system was so old. My plan with it was 1 gigabyte data per month, and then all the other wonderful things, it was $55 a month. And taking advantage of what Chris said to us a week or two ago, maybe it was time for me to go to Virgin and renegotiate. But that said, now the new plan I've got, over the course of the plan, I'm saving something like $500 on the price of the phone because they give you a great deal on it. And I'm getting 12 gigs of data for $45 a month, rather than 1 gig of data for $55 a month. So,
yeah, Natalie's point was that she has a cheap old grandfathered plan that she didn't want to change the plan, so she would just be looking to just get a new phone.
Well, I had a cheap old grandfathered plan too, and it turns out it wasn't all that great. It was a wonderful deal when I first got it a few years ago. It was the bring your own phone plan, and the plans have changed over time. So what she should have a really good look at comparing her grandfathered plan to what the current plans are available, and see if she's really getting all that good a deal after all.
Your plan was great grandfathered.
Yeah. Well, I bought the phone originally through Bell, through the source, and I got an exceptional deal at the time. And then when the 2 years was up, I got in touch with Bell to see how much my monthly cost would go down once the phone is paid off. And they just said, well, the price per month doesn't change. Too bad, so sad. And that's Bell's typical attitude on most things, which is why I've basically divested from them. And I got the plan I had from Virgin during a Boxing Week special. And at the time it was like, oh my God, that's a great plan, for both mine and Cindy's phones. And, I just haven't looked into what they could do better since then. And so, like you say, it was great grandfathered in. So keep in mind what Chris said to us a couple of weeks ago. From time to time, you should really check your carrier for, whether it's your internet service or your, smartphone service or, whatever else, to see if they can do better on your deal. So
going back to your Microsoft Store presentation, Bob, Tom notes that the store is also good to get codecs for playing media.
Yeah, there's all sorts of stuff on there besides just apps. They have fonts and all sorts of wonderful things. And some of these things are free and some you have to pay for, but in a lot of cases, the price through the store is quite discounted. So, Tom's right. Yeah, all sorts of goodies on there.
So he's also asking, what's the cheapest site to use to go to the store? Third World?
That's hard to say, isn't it? And that changes almost daily. For example, over the last several months, there's been a couple deals through a particular site. I don't remember it off the top of my head. It was actually on the Ottawa Citizen website each time for about a week or so. And you clicked on the link and went there, and you get Microsoft Office for like 10% of the regular price. And each time they'd only allow you to buy one copy. But when you're getting Microsoft Office for a tenth the regular price, it's like, oh, that's great. And I think this is Microsoft Office Pro, if I remember correctly. I'd have to check on my other computer because I took advantage of the deal the first time. But these deals just change so frequently, you just can't nail it down what the best site on any particular day is.
Bob Harris is asking, when you install a Microsoft program on 10 computers, is that 10 computers in your home, or can you give it away to 9 friends?
Yeah, Microsoft is actually silent on that. And the only restriction, it is fairly restrictive in that you're not going to give it away to too many people that are not really close friends, I think, is that they do have to be installed using the same Microsoft account when you're logged in at the store. So, are you going to give up your Microsoft account, username and password, to somebody that you maybe shouldn't be giving away that level of information? So I would suggest that in most cases, if you go over to your friend's house, you log into the store using your Microsoft account, do the installation, and then log out of the Microsoft store. There's nothing in the Microsoft agreement that says that's not legal to do. So I would say it's fine to do it. You just do have that restriction. For the installation only, you have to be logged into the store using your Microsoft or the Microsoft account that was used to purchase the license in the first place. So, it's a good way you can share with friends and family or whatever through that means.
Yeah, just to my Microsoft account.
Just as a point to note here, in relation to Bob Harris's question, today is Bob's birthday, so everybody can wish him a happy birthday.
Happy birthday, Bob.
Happy birthday, Bob.
Okay, so Tom had noticed about phones that Samsung has now committed to providing 5 years of software updates, whereas Google Pixels only have 3 years, plus 2 years of security patches.
Yeah, essentially, as far as I'm concerned, that covers up. The only thing I'm really worried about is security. So they are giving 5 years worth of security updates on their phones, which, you know, some people think that's even too short. And certainly if you don't buy the phone when it is brand new, you have less than 5 years. You know, so that's always a consideration for sure.
Okay, so we have a few minutes. Are there any other questions or things that people want to share other than all these happy birthday Bob messages? Don't all shout at once. Okay, I think it's probably too late to do this. Chris, you want to postpone that?
Let's leave it because I'll take at least 5 minutes to do that. So I think we can do our normal wrap up now, and we're almost at the witching hour now. So we're coming up on 8:26. So yeah, if you can do the wrap up slides, okay. I think we can call it a night.
All right, I've just got a couple of slides. I just want to remind everybody that the next COB meeting, the next monthly meeting, will be in October, and it's going to be Paul and Maria from the Trailing Edge. So they're going to be talking about computer hardware. So if you have any questions about hardware components or purchasing new computers, or I guess in the Trailing Edge it would be purchasing old computers. And I don't know whether they have a service center, but if you have any questions about installing hardware or fixing software problems, maybe this is a place to pose those questions to these people and see what they have to say. So that's October the 12th, and will be our regular monthly meeting. Before that, i.e. next week, October the 5th, will be the next question and answer session. So we do have a couple of things in the pipe already, but we're always looking for new material. So if you have questions or you've seen a whole bunch of different shares tonight, just brief topics that should be of interest to people, you want to present anything like that, or you have any questions that you want answered, there's the email address to send the information, and we'll see. We'll do our best to satisfy your requirements. And with that, that's it for me. And I hope everybody enjoyed tonight. And we'll see you next week.
Thanks for coming, folks. See you next week.
And happy birthday, Bob.
Thank you, gentlemen.